You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
The Giants have reported to spring training, just like every team in the major leagues. How exciting is that? Let's talk about the San Francisco Giants with Chris Haft. I'm Allison Footer. Chris, first of all, not like this major splashy signing, but it did pique my interest in signing David Hernandez as a bullpen reinforcement. So, and that's because, of course, anytime that the Giants do anything to improve their bullpen, then that piques our interest because of where they were last year. So this seems like a really good move. He's a very experienced guy, and he joins a lot of very inexperienced relievers. So this is probably pretty savvy on their part.
I would think it's potentially a very positive move for them. You know, one thing that they lacked was experience and a little veteran presence, and that's what he'll give them, conceivably. I keep on saying conceivably. Qualifying it just a little bit, because there's one thing that troubled him last year. It was control. It was walks. He averaged 4 walks per 9 innings, which kind of neutralized his 9.9 strikeouts per 9 innings. I mean, he essentially averaged 10, whatever it was. I forget exactly what, but he essentially averaged 10 strikeouts per 9 innings, which shows he still has a lively arm and knows what to what to do with it. But that gets negated if you're issuing free passes. So they'll be looking for him to establish command this spring.
Yeah, I guess they'll probably figure out pretty early on whether or not he's really going to be able to stick. You certainly can't just be putting guys on base. Sometimes, let's assume that he sort of figures that out. Sometimes it's these kinds of signings that can really make a difference on a team. Like when you look back at the season, and I just remember many, many years ago, the Astros were they were fighting for a wild card, and Russ Springer had actually retired. He was retired and he was sitting at home. And this is the middle of the season, and Jerry Hunsicker called him and said, "Can you come out of retirement?" And Russ Springer ended up being this stalwart in the bullpen for like 3 more seasons. And so sometimes you have to take risks like that, and then those can really become sort of fruitful at the end.
Those low risk, high reward deals, Allison, sometimes they're the best. You're absolutely right. So this guy was sitting at home just a few days ago, but although. Actually, Bobby Evans, the Giants general manager, said that they had maintained contact with him pretty much throughout the offseason. So he was probably thinking, if nothing else happens, I can always go to the Giants. And
Nice. Those are nice options to have, I guess.
Yeah, one thing led to another.
Yeah, well, that'll be an interesting thing to keep our eye on this spring. Another interesting thing is Jimmy Rollins, who is joining the Giants in a role that he's not really used to because he was a regular player for over a decade. Now he's a kind of a role player for the Giants. So you talked to him today, and how is his attitude? What is his? What's he thinking as he goes into spring training this year?
His attitude seemed great, Allison. He's going to need to maintain that attitude if he's going to be a bench player, which is what, he's obviously not going to take over Brandon Crawford's spot at shortstop. So, they want him to see if he can, maybe beat out. It'll be quite a competition there for the one or two utility men roles that they've got. They've got Gordon Beckham in camp, Kelby Tomlinson, who's becoming a semi-veteran, I guess you'd say. So those guys are more experienced at playing playing multiple positions. Jimmy Rollins has played 17 years in the major leagues and one inning other than shortstop. So what can he do? We'll find out here over the coming weeks.
So does it mean anything to him being a Bay Area native? He grew up in Alameda. Does it mean something to him to come back and play for the Giants? Is that something that we at the media like to talk about?
Oh, yeah, I didn't mean to talk over you.
No, that's okay.
He said something about San Francisco being his home away from home. And, now that, especially in recent years, he just really enjoys playing there like a lot of people do. And, just feeling those Bay Area breezes when he comes back. And he said that hopefully he'll get to feel a lot more of those breezes, all throughout from April through September. We'll just have to see. His batting average suffered in his last 2 seasons, hitting 224 with the Dodgers in 20, 2015 and 221 with the White Sox before they released him last year. So I don't know. We'll just have to see what happens. If he has any game left and makes the opening day squad, he could be an asset.
Another guy who's attempting to show that he still has a lot left in the tank and a little bit younger than Jimmy Rollins, that's Matt Cain, who I feel like he's been around forever. He's only 32 years old. So he had just burst on the scene about 5 years ago, threw a perfect game, and now he comes into camp trying to win the fifth starter job. I mean, so many injuries have hampered him, but his teammates say don't count him out yet. So this really appears to be, I don't know, a spring of reckoning for him, I would think. This is really where he needs to figure it out.
This is huge for him. This really is. He's had so many injuries the last few years, just, you know, since 2013, just to, you know, pretty much, you know, put up a, he could be a medical school study or something. I mean, it's almost literally from head to toe. But, and some of them have been freak injuries, you know, like he did cut a finger trying to make a sandwich. I think in 2014 it was. So, you know, things like that, those are just awful. But, yeah, he's pretty upbeat. He believes he can win the job. He said, essentially said, bring it on, you know, the other day. So he's ready for the challenge.
All right. I'm rooting for him. I like that guy. So, okay, Chris, thank you so much. Appreciate your time. Talk to you soon. Padres pitchers and catchers have officially reported to spring training, as has our awesome beat writer, A.J. Cassavell. So we're going to talk to him about what's going on with the Padres. I'm Allison Sutter. AJ, okay, you're all there. You're there. Pitchers and catchers are there. And already Andy Green has approximated that there would be around 10 pitchers in the rotation mix for this spring. We knew this was coming. We knew that this was going to be a work in progress, I should say. How are they going to find enough innings to appropriately be able to evaluate some of these guys?
That's a really good question. I think they still are kind of figuring that out right now. One of the things that'll definitely help them is the existence of the World Baseball Classic this season. It gives them an extra week of spring training, an extra week to kind of to figure out maybe who's in the rotation mix, who's more in the bullpen. I think it's not going to be 10 once we get toward the latter stages of spring training. I'm sure they'll pare it down. There are obviously a few favorites. Clayton Richard and Jolys Chacin are two guys who have been mentioned as not necessarily locks, but as guys who they signed to be starting pitchers in the opening day rotation. But in terms of finding everyone innings, I'm sure they're still working that out. Early in spring training, it's a little easier when guys aren't necessarily throwing 5-6 innings a game. They can piggyback them. They've already made the decision to push back the throwing programs of a few of their relievers because of the World Baseball Classic. So there should be enough innings to go around early on, and I think maybe they pare it down later in camp as we get closer to the season.
It's a really good point that with the World Baseball Classic, that does take care of a little bit of the issue. There are, first of all, there's just more days at spring training, even though there's more off days because of the Classic. Also, another thing that teams do is they'll have split squad days where half the team will play at home, half the team plays on the road. And then they also have what they call B games, which is basically sending a guy that they're looking at, trying to stretch out as a starter. They'll send him to the minor league fields, and there'll be some kind of like B game at like 10 o'clock in the morning. They'll join and maybe throw out a minor league game. I guess you have to get kind of creative, and that's where it's kind of, I always found this, the nuances of spring training kind of fascinating, trying to keep the whole thing organized with all of the balance and everything, and I guess that's where the coaching staff comes in. But, do you find it interesting at all, like just the way that they really have, how they have to plan everything out? It's not just, okay, 1 o'clock, this guy's going to start. I mean, there's so much that they have to keep organized.
Yeah, and this year it's probably a little trickier when you're balancing the World Baseball Classic and you're balancing 10 guys in the rotation. And it's 10 guys who, aside from Jared Cosart, who had elbow surgery during the offseason, he's going to be healthy, if not now, very, very soon. 10 guys who are all pretty healthy, so they got to find time for them. And one of the other interesting points, I think, is we have no idea who the opening day starter is. We really have no idea who 1 through 5 is going to be. Any of them could be one. Any of them, if you take 5 guys, any of them could be number one. Any of them could be number 5. So last year, I think it was around the first or second week of March, or pretty early in camp, when it became evident that it was going to be Tyson Ross, then James Shield, then Andrew Kashner, kind of in that order. And we said you can kind of put together the math and say, okay, that's probably going to be their rotation against the Dodgers when the season opens. This year, it's so wide open. we don't even really know who's in the rotation, let alone who's going to start in what order. So I think they might have to crunch some numbers with some games and maybe make some split squads pay off a little more than they normally would have to kind of get all these guys the look that they deserve.
So some position battles are going to be going on. I think the last time we talked about the outfielders. But the infield situation is turning out to be kind of an interesting thing this spring. So second base and shortstop are kind of both to be contended for, I guess. Second base, Corey Spangenberg and Ryan Schiff, and I guess maybe Schiff has a little bit of the edge on that.
Yeah, and if you look at the second half that both of them had, I guess Spangenberg's would be 2015 because he got hurt right away in 2016, and then Schiff, obviously, in 2016. They both had fantastic second half, so you could say they're both really coming off a couple great months. Now Spangenberg missed a whole season in between, and that's why I think Schiff has the slight edge because he's done it more recently. But both of them are. Probably on the roster when camp breaks, and there's just a question of who starts at second base, and whoever doesn't start will ultimately back up second base and third base and have a spot. But it's an interesting battle because both of them are left-handed hitters, so and both of them hit better against right-handed pitching. So there's not exactly a platoon situation that you can find for them. Spangenberg's their skill sets are very different. Schimp's a power hitter. Spangenberg's kind of a speed guy, but. It'll be a fun battle to watch. I think if you look at the Padres right now and the positional battles on the roster, that's the most interesting one, and that's kind of the one where, if you combine the talent, where they have the most talent. It's as I'm sure the Padres will say many times this spring, it's a good problem to have.
And that it's shortstop, so there appears that there's going to be a battle there. Can you just kind of lay out what we should expect this spring from that area?
Yeah, shortstop's interesting because it comes down to maybe a little more than just a battle between Luis Sardinas and Eric Ibar, who was signed to a minor league deal last week, because they picked up Alan Cordoba, a Rule 5 pick in the Rule 5 draft, and they really like his skill set. They really like his he looks like, in their eyes, a major league shortstop. Now, he's never played above rookie ball, so he's not a major league shortstop yet. They'd like to keep him around. But if they do that, there's not enough space on the roster to have three shortstops, especially when they need to carry either Schimpf or Spangenberg to back up at second base and third base. So with that in mind, it's a battle between Sardinas and Ibar, where it might end up being a winner-take-all battle. If Cordoba proves that he's good enough to make the major league roster, it could end up being where the winner starts on opening day, and whoever does not win, the loser, will end up in Triple A to start the season. Now, I think Sardinas has the upper hand now based on what he did at the end of last season after coming over with the Padres. And I think a lot of people forget with Luis Sardinas, he's played in the major leagues for parts of, I believe, four seasons now, maybe only three seasons, but he's never received consistent at-bats. Last season with the Padres, the first time he did, and he actually looked pretty good. He was somewhat sloppy at shortstop. He needs to clean some things up, but he's still young, and so he has the upper hand early on. But the Padres are still in search of that shortstop of the future. They're going to give him the first chance, and they have some appealing options in their minor league system as well.
So pitchers and catchers reporting is very exciting because it's symbolic. To fans, they say, okay, finally it's starting. But the actual day that pitchers and catchers report, there's really nothing much going on, right? So it's a lot of everyone's kind of gearing toward that first full squad workout, but there's just a lot of players come in and they get their hats, they get measured for their hats, and they sort of set up their lockers, and there's some physicals that are taken, but that's probably pretty much all that's going on today, right?
Yeah, I asked Andy Green what pitchers and catchers report means on a macro level, and he said, well, it means physicals are being taken, and it means guys are checking in. So Andy Green's not one to ever really get macro. He takes the cliche one day at a time very seriously. He never really makes one day bigger than anything else. But I mean, that the pitchers and catchers report, that's from a fan's perspective, that's something to get really excited about because obviously it means it's the start of a new season. But in the eyes of these guys, it's the day one is a pretty mundane day. We'll start getting into more. When the full squad reports later in the week, we'll start getting into more, I guess, intense workouts, maybe some live batting practices where you'll see some hitters facing some pitchers. But pitchers and catchers reporting is today, at least, there's not a whole lot going on. Maybe some guys playing catch. But other than that, it's a relatively slow day at Padres camp.
Yeah, it's a literal report. They show up and they report and they say, I'm here. And then everybody can just move on with what they're doing. So, okay, good stuff. AJ, thank you so much. We will talk to you next time.
Yep, thanks for having me.
The Diamondbacks are in full swing with spring training, as are all 30 teams around the major leagues. Let's talk to Steve Gilbert. What's going on in Arizona? I'm Allison Footer. Steve, I do want to start by talking about Shelby Miller, because I think that he's one of the more interesting storylines so far, and basically just because of the season he had last year. You know, clearly all eyes are still on him because of what the Diamondbacks had to give up to get him. But he really needs a bounce-back season from last year, because by all accounts that was just a disastrous showing for most of the season. So what is his mindset coming into this season?
Yeah, Allison, you know, he was somebody I was really interested in talking with, and I did yesterday for quite a while. And he didn't run from the bad season that he had last year. He was pretty honest about that, and he was honest about, you know, really feeling like the season just kind of spiraled out of control for him after a bad start, just never was able to then get his footing again, and is really excited by the clean slate that he kind of believes that this year brings for him. He's while he's, you know, plenty willing to admit how bad last season was for him, he's also looking to try to kind of put that behind him. And I think that's what Torey Lovello, their new manager, has been emphasizing as well. He's gotten a lot of questions about Shelby over the last few days, and keeps repeating pretty much the same thing, and that is that as far as he's concerned, whatever happened last year is in the past. He hasn't done a lot of digging into what happened and all of that, more focused on getting Shelby right for this year and allowing him to have kind of, again, a clean slate coming into this season, which is certainly important for him.
I guess maybe having a new manager, right, just because that could be a step in the right direction to, I mean, not that he had any issues last year per se with management or coaching, but maybe just a different person and a sort of a mind clear and clean slate kind of thing. Is there anything to that?
Yeah, I think so too. I think, you know, the new front office, a new manager. I think also this year there's not as many expectations on the team as a whole, so that probably helps him a little bit. We're another year away from the trade, so it's not quite as fresh in everybody's mind. It's not quite the topic it was as it was last spring. So I think he's kind of hoping that also a good start would help him get out of the gates and not have to deal with questions again about any struggle. So I think all eyes right now in camp are kind of on Zach Greinke and you know, watching him. And he threw his first bullpen session today as we talk, which is Wednesday. It was a light bullpen session. The Diamondbacks have talked a bunch about how they're kind of slow playing him a little bit this spring, because they have the extra time with the WBC, so they're going to you know, take their time getting him ready, and not push things and not have him overextend himself during spring training.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. Just that, you know, if there were strength, massive strength in other areas, then the focus wouldn't be on one guy. And it is interesting, but Shelby Miller had opened the second half last year in the minor leagues, and he was recalled at the end of August. He actually had a really good showing in his final six starts. I think there were a bunch of shutout innings in his last two outings. He has 3.98 ERA over the six games. And, I mean, it doesn't say much. First of all, the Diamondbacks had been out of the race, like, basically the entire year. So it was definitely, like, a no-pressure situation. I guess they really were hoping that would be a confidence builder, and that could maybe carry over.
Yeah, I think at least it gave him a better feeling going into the offseason, at least that maybe, you know, kind of he had figured a couple of things out, and maybe now it's easier to remember, you know, what he was doing during those last two starts, as you mentioned, when he had, I believe it was 11 scoreless innings over those two starts. And you know, maybe that's, again, something that is fresh for him in a certain respect, and he's able to then use that to give himself a little confidence heading into this year.
Overall, how do you see this pitching staff? I don't know why I still like it. A lot has to go right, but I do. Like, when I look at the names in the starting staff, I do think that it could be pretty good. But again, they all kind of have to have really, really, like, career years. But what do you think of the starting staff?
Yeah, so I think they need to take steps forward. You know, you make a good point with some of the younger pitchers, like a Robbie Ray, who showed flashes last year. So, you know, it's not unreasonable to expect or to think that he could turn in a good season. It's not out of the realm of possibility that Shelby Miller comes back and pitches more like he had in the rest of the years of his career outside of last year. it's not unlikely that Zach Greinke could come back and obviously pitch better than he did last year. And you can kind of go on down the line, you know, Patrick Corbin and Archie Bradley, all those guys, you know, have either a track record of having some success at one point in their career or have really good stuff and figure to be better if they're able to mature a little bit more and improve a little bit. So I think, you know, on paper right now, it looks like, oh, you know, the pitching could be a weak spot for them, but also could turn into a strength if, and there's that word again, if they're able to take steps forward, some of the younger pitchers.
All right. Good stuff. Thank you, Steve. Talk to you next time.
All right, Allison. Look forward to it.
Colorado Rockies begin spring training hoping to make some noise in the NL West, and they have a player that they think could help them do just that. Let's talk to Thomas Harding about that. I'm Allison Footer. Thomas, I want to talk about Ian Desmond. I think this is fascinating. I know we've touched on this a little bit, but let's retouch it. He signed a 5-year contract worth $70 million to play a position he has never played before, and that is first base. So he seems to have worked at this a lot during the off season to make sure that he is ready to go. What's the feel you're getting about how confident he is starting this new venture in his career?
I think he's very confident because he's an athlete, and athletes are confident they can do anything. There used to be a time when you would take the old player and move him to first base, often an old catcher, and say, well, you can't move anymore. Go play first base. I think that the game has grown beyond that, and I'm glad that it has, because a bad first baseman can drag down your entire team. If you think about it, who handles the ball more other than the pitcher and catcher? It's the first baseman. So you have to have an athlete over there. You have to have somebody that can really save his teammates over there. So I like the idea of taking someone who is athletic and still athletic and moving him to that position, because really it's one of the most important places on the field.
Yeah, I don't understand. I mean, I get the fact that you might have to do a little bit less than some of the other infielders, yes, because you're catching the ball, you're not necessarily throwing it. So, yes, we get that. But you still have to have range. You still have to be able to pick the ball out of the dirt. I mean, that you're not every one of your fielders is going to be a gold glover. You have to be able to make the 3-1 plays. I mean, you have to know. You really have to be instinctive, and that's, I guess, where it's a little bit scary because you don't really know what kind of first base instincts Ian Desmond is going to have.
Yeah, I think two things that help, because and I go back and I look at some infielders that have moved to first base and done quite well. Look at Rod Carew back years ago. He actually ended up playing more first than second, even though a lot of us see him as a second baseman. And also Pete Rose, who may have been the greatest player not to have one position in history, but I thought that he was a very good first baseman at the end of his career. If you're an infielder and you move to first, you're used to the ball coming off the bat there. Granted, it's a mirror image, so you're used to it. Also, yeah, there's a smaller amount of space to go, but it's a very important space. And you mentioned gold glovers. They've got two in that infield, DJ LeMahieu and Nolan Arenado. But think about it. They get to more balls than most people. So they're going to be making throws that other people aren't going to be making, and a first baseman has to be pretty agile to pick up those throws. I mean, when Nolan Arenado is throwing a ball from the third base coaching box and maybe it bounces along the way with a lot of steam on it, you have to be good over there at first base to handle that. I think it's more important to be good when you have fielders with more range, because every throw isn't going to be room service.
So has he been working with coaches before spring training? Did he get together some of the Rockies personnel, or did he have people on his own?
Yeah, he did a little bit of everything. In fact, I was at the general manager's meetings, and I, unbeknownst to me, that's when the idea first came up. So when the idea first came up with his agents, they called him, and he said, yeah, I'll play first base. There's a kid in the Rockies system, not a kid, but Carell Prime, who's hit for some power. I think he played in Australia last winter. A knowledgeable type player. I don't know exactly when or if he'll get here, but this is a guy who's played a whole lot of baseball in a whole lot of different positions. It turned out when he was young there in Sarasota, Florida, the guy who helped him in the offseason to teach him how to prepare as a professional was Ian Desmond. Well, Desmond gets this phone call, and he turns to Carell Prime and says, Carell, you play some first base? He's like, yes. So Desmond's like, please help me learn how to play first base. So they worked on it, And then this, then in January, I believe it was, Desmond flew out to Arizona, and he worked with Bud Black, Ron Gideon, who was a longtime minor league instructor who has helped people play first base, Tony Diaz, who's the first base coach, and Stu Cole, who's the third base coach and infield coach. And they worked together, and they all told him, hey, Ian, looks like you're heading in the right direction here. So he left with a lot of confidence there. And he's been doing it since the guys arrived here, as you know, with the Rockies. Almost nobody waits until the day you have to, quote-unquote, report. So he's been out here for a few days working with DJ LeMahieu and with Nolan Arenado and Trevor Story here. So they've been taking infield practice on the backfield unofficially while the pitchers are working out officially.
Yeah, it's interesting. You have to wonder if he would be so – well, I mean, $70 million makes you willing to do a lot of things. But if he hadn't moved to the outfield when he joined the Rangers and had so much success doing that, like making a position change, you wonder if he would have been a little less enthusiastic about possibly doing this. Maybe that experience last year instilled a little bit more confidence that, yeah, he's pretty versatile and he can pretty much do whatever he puts his mind to.
Yeah, I think that gave him some confidence, but also $70 million gives you more confidence. I mean, if you look at last year, his entire market fell apart on him. So really the only option was to go to the Rangers and play the outfield, and I'm sure he's sitting there saying, hey, I've been a shortstop in the major leagues for a number of years. I can do anything. And he ended up doing it, you know, going to the outfield and playing. What the interesting thing about this contract is, I believe it's the third year of the contract, there's a $22 million payment. After that, it goes down to like $8 and $7 million. So let's say that they have a first baseman come up. They have Ryan McMahon that they're developing. And let's say they want to move Ian Desmond. He could very easily become a Ben Zobrist-type multi-position starter. You don't know what's going to happen with the Rockies, with free agency in the future. I mean, they spent more money this year, but at some point they may be losing free agents. Right now they have a guy who's playing first base for the first time, but he also has extensive experience at shortstop, and he's played left field and center field. So you can do a lot of things with Ian Desmond as his contract continues.
That's interesting, because that was my last question for you. So what happens if this doesn't work? So you do make a good point that he has so much experience that if something else falters with another position on the team, it's not like they're going to have to sit around and go, okay, well, now we're paying him for 3 years to do nothing because we have nothing else to do with him. He could do a lot.
Yeah, he could do a whole lot. I think it's more likely that someone would get hurt or, as I say, in a future year, maybe someone leaves as a free agent. I mean, let's say it's the second baseman, DJ LeMahieu, or let's say it's one of the outfielders, like a Charlie Blackman or someone like that. Then you've got Ian Desmond that you can move to a number of different places. And Ian Desmond is a baseball player. One of the things I think the Rockies are looking for, gee, they're all baseball players, but one of the things they're looking for are guys who can play in multiple positions. Why is that? Because they tend to carry one more pitcher than other teams. And every now and then you'll have an emergency game where someone has to play an unfamiliar position. If you look at Trevor Story when he was coming up, he played shortstop, but right before coming to the majors, he played third base and second base to get him ready. All of their outfielders, they make it a point to make them play all three outfield positions. Ryan McMahon that I mentioned earlier, he was drafted as a third baseman with Nolan Arenado there. You'd think he'd have to move. But he started playing some first base last year and in the Arizona Fall League. So throughout their system, they're trying to develop players like this because, they never know when the opening is going to come, and, B, when you carry one fewer position player than other teams, you want to be a little bit more versatile.
Good stuff. Okay, Thomas, thank you. We'll keep our eye on that. Appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
All right, thanks a lot.
The Dodgers are getting ready to welcome their pitchers and catchers to spring training, which means that we are on the scene with Ken Gernick. I'm Allison Fetter. Ken, a couple just odds and ends to sort of tie up before things really get going. It seems that the Dodgers have made a flurry of signings, all unconfirmed at this point, but they got several players that they had their eye on, Chase Utley being one, Franklin Gutierrez, Sergio Romo. So they're really making sure that they go into this spring training pretty stacked and not leaving a whole lot of loose ends, right?
High-quality problem there. I think every team would like to have too many players. Right now, the Dodgers seem to have too many players, but with all the DLs that they had last year, they know that that doesn't necessarily last forever.
So Sergio Romo, I thought that was interesting. So what will his role be, assuming this all goes through?
Well, he's basically the replacement for Joe Blanton as the setup man for Kenley Jansen. And among many things that the Dodgers like, in addition to postseason experience and closer experience, with that slider, he's got a very different look than most of the Dodger right-handers are young and hard-throwing. So it gives a different look, which they like, and it does give that experience as a setup. Now, the Dodgers do tend to mix and match, so it's not necessarily strictly an eighth inning and then ninth inning role for Jansen, you know. But that's what the way that it would shape up, and they've got quite a few young arms in there, and so that experience is something which Blanton offered last year, and they hope that Romo will bring it in this year.
Well, Franklin Gutierrez is kind of interesting. It might, first of all, they're going to have to clear off some space from their 40-man roster. But I guess there's some concern about depth when it comes to right-handed hitters. So he would probably fit in that way. You think that's where most of the thinking was when it came to signing him?
Well, definitely, although he has been a Gold Glove in the past, so he certainly could play either at the corners. But the main reason is for that right-handed bat. I think he was tied for second in the league for home runs by off of left-handed pitching. So he does provide that right-handed bat, and they were so weak last year against left-handed pitching. That's really what aced Utley out to a certain extent, in that Logan Forsythe, not only are they going younger there, but they wanted a right-handed bat at second base to balance out a generally left-handed lineup. So both Gutierrez brings that. And he does bring some experience. But the Dodgers do have, right now, it seems like too many outfielders if everybody's healthy. So there will be quite a competition.
The last thing I want to ask you about, I just think this is really cool, mainly, well, not mainly, but number one, because I'm a big Oral Hershiser fan, just from when he was pitching for the Dodgers, really good memories watching him in the World Series in 1988. He's going to kind of be doing double duty this spring. So he's going to be a pitching instructor, I guess, replacing Greg Maddux. I mean, he has his experience as a pitching coach. He was a Texas pitching coach for several years. But that's kind of neat that they're going to see him back in uniform, and he obviously has a grand amount of knowledge. I guess maybe he'll be working with some of the younger pitchers?
Well, he'll be available to work with anybody, but very often it's the younger pitchers who need the most work. And so, and Oral yesterday was talking about how he was thinking, you know, at this stage of his life and his career, he remembers back when he was a young pitcher, and the guys walking around were Sandy Koufax and Don Drysdale, along with Campanella and quite a few of the old line Dodgers, the Hall of Famers. And so now he sees where he's kind of advanced to that elder statesman role. And he enjoys it. He's been a pitching coach in the major leagues with the Texas Rangers, so it's not foreign to him. He's still primarily a broadcaster, but with Maddux staying home and being a volunteer coach with UNLV where his son pitches, I think that Rick Honeycutt was welcoming the help. He's not territorial as a pitching coach. He came up, he spent time with the Dodgers when back in the day when Koufax was a spring instructor, and he knows the value of that. And when Koufax came back again, Honeycutt welcomed him when Koufax was with the team a few years ago. And he welcomed Maddux to offer his expertise. And now it's just kind of carrying in the line a longtime Dodger tradition of bringing in these Hall of Famers and former Cy Young winners. And now it's up to Oral.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. He's got so much to offer. He's such a knowledgeable person. So, okay, good stuff. Ken, thank you very much. Enjoy spring. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Allison.
MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.TV Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details.